Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for Sunday, October 12, 2025. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, What's Next for Strides? Changes to funding, low barrier model, among suggestions in director's report. This is by Jana Wersima, Champaign. A special Tuesday night meeting of the City of Champaign Township Board will focus solely on the township's low-barrier homeless shelter, which currently has enough funding to stay open through February. Materials prepared for the study session include a report to the board by Charlene Murray, interim executive director of the shelter, that expounds on some of the ideas mentioned in a report expounds on some of the ideas mentioned in a recent revisioning proposal authored by representatives from the township, leadership at Strides, and the Champaign County Continuum of Service Providers to the Homeless. In August of 2022, the city and township entered an agreement wherein the city would provide $3.9 million in American Rescue Plan Act funds for the shelter, which in turn would be operated by the township. At the time, the township proposed running the shelter at a capacity of 50 men and 10 women for 2 years and planned to explore other funding sources for long-term operation, per a report penned by city staff. While the township had hoped to secure permanent funding for the shelter via a property tax increase, a referendum on the matter failed during elections in both November 2024 and April of 2025. Strides opened in December of 2022 and has remained open for nearly a full year beyond the initial 2-year agreement, reflecting both the ongoing community need and our staff's commitment to sustaining operations, Murray said. Current funding extends through February 2026, and work is underway to identify additional resources and operational improvements to ensure continuity of services beyond that date. For instance, Murray said that the shelter would like to explore the possibility of creating a hybrid 501c3 model, which would allow Strides to access private funding while maintaining some government supports. Furthermore, she noted that while Strides has had a very lenient low-barrier model that places few requirements on guests since its inception, officials want to review this approach. This would include potentially redefining the term low-barrier to fit an amended mission statement. Changes could also include setting a limit on how long guests stay at the shelter and creating a behavior-based approach to issues associated with substance abuse, she wrote. Murray also said that the shelter would like to make case management a requirement in the future. A large percent of our current guests utilize case management, so this wouldn't be a big change in theory, just in practice, in that case managers would meet more frequently, more intentionally, and have benchmarks created in order to track goals and success, she told the News Gazette. Additionally, she wrote that guests also need continued case management after leaving the shelter. While this effort would require additional funding, it is a key component of the Strides revisioning plan, Murray stated in her report. We've seen firsthand that some guests return due to challenges such as budgeting, financial instability, and difficulty paying rent consistently. The shelter currently has grant funds to provide up to 6 months of post-exit case management, but this is limited to a small subset of individuals. Restructuring staff. Murray also discussed a need for staffing changes at the shelter, which currently employs 29 full-time staff members and 2 part-time workers who help cover absences and call-offs as needed. She said that staff are currently scheduled for Monday through Wednesday or Thursday through Saturday, with the two groups covering alternating Sundays. This model has become exhaustive, providing limited coverage and strain for staff call-offs, burnout for those who manage to cover shifts outside their schedule, and inconsistency for guests, she said. Stride's leadership is proposing that the staffing structure be updated to include case management schedules moving to Monday through Friday, which will provide continuity of care for guests and enhance communication with staff and community partners. According to a report by Deputy Township Supervisor Kareen Jordan, the shelter's expenses for the month of August totaled a little over $182,000, with payroll and benefits accounting for over 90% of total costs. When asked for more detail on how the staffing model might change, Murray replied, "Our staff are aware that staffing cuts and/or hour reductions are inevitable, considering our current limited funding. However, we want to be able to discuss our plans with them prior to making them public. We intend to call a future study session with the town board for approval and support after this month's all-staff meeting." Security updates. Her report also included plans to enhance shelter security, such as installing more cameras and a fence to create a physical barrier and visual delineation for unwanted visitors, predators, and community members not utilizing Stride services. When asked if there are plans for a gate, Murray said that this is being considered and the shelter would like to discuss the fencing concept in future study sessions with the board. Despite discussions with law enforcement, safety on the exterior of the building has been an ongoing concern for both guests and staff, she wrote in her report. To promote safety outside of the shelter, Strides has consulted with local security firms to get costs and weigh options for added security specific to outdoors. Capacity issues. She also said that reverting to Stride's original capacity of 60 guests would reduce foot traffic outside the shelter. The shelter's current maximum capacity is 74 beds for most of the year and 80 beds in the winter, Murray told the News Gazette. This includes 10 cots reserved for emergencies. "We are currently at capacity," she said. "At the beginning of the week, we had about 30 or so people on our wait list and about half of those actively seeking beds, which means that they're coming nightly to check in and to remain on the wait list." She added that going back to 60 beds would improve programming, case management, staff-to-guest ratio, and the speed at which people move through the sheltering system and into their own homes. The revisioning proposal states that City of Champaign Township is working with the Cunningham Township Supervisor's Office in Urbana to move our women to their programs, which will open additional beds at the shelter for guests who qualify for rapid rehousing program. Assuming women have been moved out by December, the shelter at 70 East Washington Street would begin implementing a rapid rehousing plan, with this program being located on what was formerly the women's side of the facility. The plan states that this would allow the shelter to serve an additional 14 to 21 men each night. The shelter also plans to expand the winter shelter to 95 beds if emergency and transitional housing funds are awarded. "We have completed a survey to be included in the application process for a new grant opportunity, which will provide funds specifically for winter expansion," Murray told the News Gazette. "With board approval and if awarded, we intend to use funds to potentially hire additional safety support, winter supplies, as well as seasonal staff so that we can bring more unhoused people indoors during the cold winter ahead. Funding the future. According to the revisioning proposal for STRIDES, the shelter's current funding sources include Emergency and Transitional Housing Grant, $238,500, a Rapid Rehousing Grant for $125,000, Housing and Homeless Innovations Grant, $180,000, donations from First Presbyterian Church of Champaign, a grant from Champaign for flooring. Township board members previously voted in June to approve an about $86,000 contract for the work. The plan does not state how much federal pandemic funding remains at this point. Champaign Finance Director Kay Neese told the city in late August that there was about $980,000 left from the city's grant to the township. Murray's report lists specific grants and other funding sources that the shelter plans to pursue in the future, but amounts are not listed for most of these. Improving communication. STRIDES has been a constant topic of discussion at township meetings as of late, with members of the board, which comprises the same people as the city council, growing increasingly upset with township supervisor Kyle Patterson's failure to provide adequate data about the shelter and communicate in a timely fashion as the countdown to February continues. For instance, township board members recently expressed frustration about receiving the proposed revisioning plan just a couple of hours before their September 30th meeting and not being involved in its creation. They also requested that Patterson schedule a study session for further discussion on STRIDES. Murray wrote that communication and transparency are among STRIDES priorities as it moves forward. This includes regular reports at board meetings with meeting materials submitted in advance. She also discussed the idea of scheduling preliminary information exchange meetings in between sessions and creating a biweekly community newsletter. Additionally, she said that the shelter proposes and seeks advice on opening listening sessions up to the larger community and businesses. Board meetings should not be the only time STRIDES leadership hears from our neighbors, Murray wrote. Continuing on the front page, read the weekend special titled Something's Cooking in Danville. This is by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. It's often called the best smelling corner on Illinois 1 in town. On the northeast side of the intersection with William Street sits a Lee's Famous Recipe Chicken. Next door is the aroma of pizza at Jocko's. The two restaurants have a long history in the community with several generations of customers. Owner Steve Divillet and daughter Natalie, Vice President of Divillet Development Corp., appreciate how great the community has been to their family and the restaurants. Jocko's is named after Steve's father and Natalie's grandfather, Lowell Jocko Divillet, started Jocko's drive-in root beer stand in the late 1950s on Georgetown Road, where the southeast loop is to get on Interstate 74. In 1967, he built Famous Recipe Chicken, and he and wife Shirley bought the old New York Central Freight House at Gilbert and William Streets as its new home. Steve said his father operated Famous Recipe until 1970. He remembers trips to Cape Girardeau, Missouri, where they'd see the hundreds of thousands of geese that would stop there. We went to a place called Pizza Inn, and he really liked the pizza, Steve said, so he came back, and long story short, he contacted the company and built Pizza Inn in 1972. We were Pizza Inn for 20-some years, probably, he said. We weren't really a Pizza Inn, we were kind of his version of it. While they used probably 20% of the chain's products, Steve said, their restaurant didn't have the customary buffet. And when it came to appetizers, sandwiches, and pastas, Jocko found his own recipes from places he visited. The family got out of the franchise in the late 1990s. It was just a flawless transition, Steve said. It went from Pizza Inn, we changed the sign, and Jocko's was a natural name because everyone called it Jocko's to begin with. Jocko died in 2010, while Shirley passed in 2014. Steve is the owner of Divilay Development Corp., which owns the restaurants and is also involved in other real estate and some rentals. His sisters also have stakes in the business. Natalie works in the office and has taken over Jocko's. She helps out during lunch rush every weekday and makes sure things run smoothly. Lee's has about 30 employees. General manager Stacy Gooch has been there about 40 years. Jocko's has about 80 full-time and part-time employees. It has also had a lot of long-serving employees with some tenures of 10, 20, and 30 years. They've been amazing, Natalie said, adding that the employees are like family. We're very close. Steve said they hope the newer employees, including some high school students, learn from the example of the experienced employees. 30-year employee Beth Jerez said the Divilays are the reason she stayed so long. They've been great to us, she said, adding that even during the COVID-19 pandemic, they took care of their employees. She said she worked for Jocko when she first started, and he was just as great. Jerez said the job also has been convenient for her and her kids, as she doesn't have to miss any of their sports activities. She said some people can't believe she's worked at Jocko's all these years, but she'll never regret it. She said she loves seeing generations of families come in. With some customers, it seems like she had just seen them pregnant and their kids are driving. Cheryl Johnson, who was getting the soup and salad bar ready for lunch recently, said she'd been working there for 13 years. She most enjoys her fellow employees and the customers. She also said everyone is like family. Regular remodels. The properties have changed some during the years, but continue to highlight the history of trains at that corner. Steve said they try to do a complete remodel about every 10 years. Lee's last saw an update about 5 years ago. It had a complete exterior facelift and a little bit done in the lobby with tile and wall coverings. A digital reader board was installed a few years ago. Jocko's has railroad signs throughout, and two model trains can be activated by putting a quarter in a machine. They travel on a track that runs above customers' heads along the perimeter of the main dining area. Steve said the idea for the trains came when he saw them operating at another place, possibly Galena, where his mom was from, and thought it'd be cool to put them in at Jocko's. They didn't want them to run the entire 12 hours a day the restaurant was open, so they installed the quarter machine so kids could send them on a journey whenever they wanted. Natalie said it's very popular, with kids running up to activate the trains, which run in opposite directions. She said the heartwarming part is seeing generations of families enjoy it. The main dining area was the original Pizza Inn, with the back area added on around 1980. We've done a lot of remodels and changes as the time goes by, Steve said. That included a couple windows, and the model trains were added about 15 to 20 years ago. They also changed out the booths, carpets, and color scheme, as well as the server station. We've been through a couple salad bars, which is our number one selling item, Steve said. They've revamped the salad bar area about 5 years ago, and the restaurant sees continuous basic upkeep. Gathering place. The back rooms constantly see use for parties and reunions. In addition to the salad bar, Jocko's special pizza is popular. The restaurant has some unique variations, with managers coming up with a pizza of the month, including one to celebrate Thanksgiving, and dessert pizzas, such as a s'mores pizza. You run out of ideas on pizzas, so you just get creative and look in trade magazines, Steve said. Recipes Jocko found at various places are still being used today, such as for the spaghetti sauce and lasagna. The pizza dough is made fresh daily. They accept catering orders for both restaurants. Weddings and some events will request chicken and lasagna or spaghetti and pizza. One of the challenges through the history of the restaurants was dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic, Steve said. Lee's stayed open because it was carryout, but it was crazy, Steve said. Jocko's instituted curbside and carryout to keep some people working, but Steve said they were losing quite a bit of money every month. A couple weeks before Christmas 2020, the state ordered them to close or face a fine, and they refused and were fined through the State Liquor Commission, Steve said. As for the future, Steve said of his three daughters, Natalie has expressed interest in keeping the family businesses going. As long as she has an interest, we'll keep it going, Steve said. Natalie said it's important to her to continue the restaurants in the community. Steve said there are a lot of restaurants in Danville, and we're just lucky that we're one of people's favorites. The little mom-and-pop restaurants are a thing of the past, he said. It's kind of cool to keep that going. Not only the employees become family, so do the customers, Natalie said. She said customers celebrate employees' birthdays and exchange cards. Everybody gets really close, she added. Danville proud, the Divoli said. Danville has been very good to the family. Steve said the city is different than when he was growing up, but it's been an amazing place for an independent restaurant. I don't know if we could do this in another city, he said. It's just been a really, really good town for us. We're really fortunate. My dad had a vision, and we're doing our best to carry it on. Natalie added that Danville is home, and she's lucky to have met so many wonderful people. The restaurants remain successful. One sign of this is recent expansions of the parking areas. We just got a tremendous crew in here, and they share our vision of serving the best food we can, Steve said. And taking care of our customers has always been number one on our list, and they do that so well. Danville's been really good to us, and we're fortunate to be here. And continuing inside the front page, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossow. One issue in, and newspaper publisher Maya Beverly already is thinking big. It was pretty good, but I'm working on expanding it, the 10-year-old from Champaign said. It needs a bit more news in it. The 4-page Crimson Chronicle was delivered last week to houses along Crimson Lane in Cherry Hills. It included updates on plants and animals in the neighborhood. Squirrels are running all over. An interview with a 6th grader, article of the week, and the story behind this month's Moon Festival. A 5th grader at Countryside School, Maya, is a one-girl newsroom tasked with reporting, writing, editing, photography, design, and distribution. It was mostly the layout that was hard, she said. I had to change it many times. Inspired by Countryside teacher Phil Weber and the book The Landry News, Maya is serious about her newspaper business. Her mom and dad, Tanya and Blair, serve as sounding boards, but mostly stay out of the way. The Weekly Chronicle will remain free of charge, Maya said, no matter how many pages she adds. As far as an online component, I'm going to stick with print, she said. Already excited about a second issue that will feature a youth soccer star and a garbage truck malfunction that had neighbors talking. It's hyper-local, Mom said. And the News Gazette seconds. I was so proud to see her put this together and take the initiative of connecting with people in our neighborhood. And in history, area history, in 1925, people in the western, northwestern, and southwestern sections of the Champaign City may sleep more securely now since Mayor Burrs has fulfilled his pre-election pledge to furnish an all-night police patrol for them. These districts have been most in need of police protection, and now patrolmen will cover regular beats throughout the night, pulling the box at half-hour intervals. In 1975, following the clearing of Champaign County Sheriff Everett Hedrick on all charges of official misconduct, Stephen Davis, one of the deputies who had placed charges, said he will fight to keep his job. Hedrick was accused last month by 7 deputies of mismanagement of the sheriff's office. Hedrick mentioned the possibility of filing lawsuits against the deputies, claiming defamation of character, and has also indicated that he will try to fire them. In 2010, the Champaign City Council will listen to reasons why city planners think the East University Tax Increment Financing District, University Avenue and the First Street near downtown Champaign, should be extended for the next 13 years. In international history, today's highlight, on October 11, 1991, Anita Hill accused Supreme Court nominee Clarence Thomas of sexual harassment in testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Thomas denounced the proceedings as a high-tech lynching and was confirmed on October 15 by a 52-48 vote. On this date, in 1906, the San Francisco Board of Education ordered the city's Asian students segregated into their own school. The order was later rescinded at the behest of President Theodore Roosevelt, who in exchange promised to curb future Japanese immigration to the United States. And in our communities, agriculture, have a headline for Lunchtime Treat Leaves Area Farmers Appreciative, says by Jim Rossall. Representatives from Champaign County Farm Bureau and Country Financial hosted a Feed a Farmer event Friday afternoon at Total Grain Marketing on Staley Road in Champaign, capping a week-long initiative ahead of Sunday's National Farmers Day. The volunteer crew handed out hundreds of lunches that included pork chop sandwiches, chips, drinks, and desserts. "Everyone is so appreciative," said Emily Clare, director of engagement at the Farm Bureau. "We're greeted with smiles and thank yous." And regarding Danville, some more history of the state's first highway. The state's first highway has a rich history as maintained at the Vermilion County Museum. Sue Richter, the museum's executive director, said the road was first known as the Vincennes Trail and then Hubbard's Trace, after trader Gurdon S. Hubbard. It also was the Dixie Highway, originally a cattle trail dating back to 1822, running from Chicago to Danville. It was established as a state route in the 1830s. Hubbard's Trace and the Vincennes to Chicago Trail became Illinois One and part of the Dixie Highway. Vermilion County was the first one to have hard roads. The Dixie Highway came straight down. It hit Main Street, and then actually it went east to Covington, Indiana, then south, which was the Dixie Highway route. Demand for roads for automobiles pushed the route to be designated as Illinois One in 1915. Paving began that year. By 1925, the paved Dixie Highway stretched from downtown Chicago to Miami, according to additional history from the A's R.U.S. model of Ford Club in Crete. Eric Childers, Danville's acting city engineer, found maps dating to 1950 that showed Illinois 1, U.S. 136, going along the path of Gilbert to Fairchild to North Vermilion, as it exists today. We'll take a short break now. Please stay tuned. We'll continue with the second half hour in a break, after a short break.